What happens when a progressive band decides to use AI as the core technology for everything about their next album? From music, to lyrics, to album art. To hear this remarkable story, we are honored to welcome Claire Evans to the show. Claire is an author and musician, a principal of the band Young Americans Challenging High Technology, or YACHT. My name is Dirk Niemeyer, a social futurist interested in systems that will make the quality of our lives better. My partner is Jonathan Follett, a writer, composer, and emerging tech researcher. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 12 of Creative Next, a show about future-proofing creatives in a world of AI automation. Let's get started. While this, the last episode of the season, is part of a block on sound and music, and our guest is a musician, she is also an artist. Whereas our other guests in this exploration of sound and music were more focused on the tools and corporate side of things, Claire Evans is, primarily, an artist. Artists, more than most other creative professionals, are the people who push the bleeding edge of technology. It serves not only as a tool for them to manifest their work, it also is a cultural touchpoint to comment on and express with or against. From the conversational focus of Stephanie Dinkins to the generational nature of Mario Klingemann's work, art augmented by AI and related emerging technologies is where the most interesting creations are happening. One thing our artists have in common is a passion for AI as a material, to use Josh Clark's metaphor. Whereas other creatives are enormously benefiting from AI-empowered tools, they generally remain focused on their own core contexts, merely reaping the benefits that automation has to offer. A common thread with all of our artists is a deeper curiosity about an exploration of how this virtual sausage gets made. On this episode, finishing out the season, our artist actually takes that even a little deeper. Her band used their latest album, Chain Tripping, as an opportunity to learn about and apply AI in and around all of the contexts of creation. Not just the music itself, the core artifact of any band, but the lyrics, artwork, and other content and communication surrounding it. This pioneering spirit, an almost total immersion, makes an insightful end cap to our third season of Creative Next. So it is that we welcome author and musician Claire Evans to the show. Her band, YACHT, an acronym for Young Americans Challenging High Technology, has released 7 studio albums over the last 2 decades. Let's begin by learning more about the band and their origins.
We have been engaged with technology in many ways over the years. The band has been around for 17 years, and its origins are in the DIY and punk rock scenes of the Pacific Northwest, which was not an anti-technological scene, but certainly a scene that placed more sort of preference on the analog. And so my partner, co-founder of the band, Jonna, sort of started playing laptop music in a very analog punk scene in the early 2000s. And in of itself, I suppose that was kind of like meta punk, you know, bringing computer into a space that computers had not sort of traditionally been associated with. But Jonna understood relatively early that, you know, the personal computer represented a great deal of freedom for independent artists, not just in terms of how music is produced, but also how music is distributed and all the other things that touch that, like, you know, artwork and messaging and video and text and communication and all the things which bands have to think about and do. Computers simplified that a great deal. So that's always been our stance, is how can we use, you know, approachable consumer technologies in sideways ways that allow us to distribute and communicate at a wider level and at a much larger scale than a super indie band like ourselves have historically been able to do. We're not programmers or coders, I should say that at the outset. Our relationship to technology has always kind of been from the outside looking in and trying to figure out how we can kind of bend and adapt tools to our purposes.
Like our other artist guests this season, YACHT is using the latest technology as the canvas for their art. Let's hear about some more technologies of how they've used tech in the past.
Well, it's funny. We've been a band long enough now that every time we poke our head out into the world and try to release an album, it's a completely different landscape for musicians, right? I mean, when we first started out, it was just, you know, make your own CDRs, book your own tours, use MySpace to distribute your message. And then over the years, that has changed, right? And so now we're talking about streaming and a lot of other things. And we use technology not so much to not only distribute the music, but also to think about how we can pierce the endless feed of information that surrounds all of our fans or potential fans and create a signal that is stronger than all the noise. So using technology to manufacture scarcity in different ways. We've done projects, for example, where you know, we've made it so that you can only listen to one of our songs when ride share prices are surging in Los Angeles. Or we made a project once where you could only see our album artwork if you signed up to receive it via fax. We're really interested in activating dormant technologies that have sort of that are all around us and finding ways to use them that serve our purposes explicitly. But a lot of the time we also get really in the weeds on specifics of consumer technologies, like even the compact disc, for example. Like a few years ago, we made an EP sort of about compact discs, and we released it in part as a sort of compact disc sculpture, I suppose. It was a clear disc with all of our music encoded on it, but no clear way to play it back because there was no reflective foil applied. And that meant having to contact you know, a CD manufacturing plant and walk them through a process of making a disc and stopping before the disc was completed in order to make this sort of conceptual CD. So it's, you know, it's using technologies in ways that are sort of subversive, playful, that help to communicate the larger message of the individual songs or albums that we're trying to distribute, and also as a way to kind of discover and explore how things are made and how things work. You know, we are self-taught in so many ways, and a lot of what we know about how things work in music, but in tech a lot more generally, is a consequence of the fact that we have made something that forced us to learn the process of manufacturing, production, distribution, etc. So it's a constant fluid experimentation.
Yacht's long history of engaging with technologies primed them for their latest album, Chain Tripping, released last year. It involves AI in deeply immersive ways. Why, for this project, did Yacht go back to the cutting edge in general, and with AI in particular?
I think the simple answer to that question is that we just wanted to understand it. And since we only really learn by doing things and making things, we figured that the most efficient way for us to get a sort of bodily understanding of what the hell AI is and what it's doing and what it means for artists and for all of us was to try to make something with it and to sort of struggle through the process as non-coders, right? So trying to find points of entry into this seemingly opaque, ubiquitous technology that could make it adaptable to our purposes. There's also something I think kind of really interesting about the reflective quality of AI as it works today. I mean, you build a machine learning model by feeding it lots of information, training data. And in the context of music, I mean, that information is historic. It's the history of music. It's, you know, a corpus of millions of notes or a corpus of millions of words of song lyrics from musicians and artists that we love or ourselves. So this idea that we can use an emerging technology, not only learn to understand it, but also maybe learn something about ourselves in the process, sort of see through the funhouse mirror and get something, you know, maybe even find the secret to what it means to make a song or what it means specifically to make a Yacht song. I think we had this delusion when we started this project, when we really didn't know anything about AI beyond, you know, what the general public knows. We thought maybe that we could use AI to decode ourselves, to interrogate ourselves and find out who we were and if there was a secret formula, some essence to our music that we had never been able to see before because we were too close to it. I don't know that that's what happened, but I certainly think that sort of diving into our own history in order to create something new is super interesting. And it's also, you know, kind of what's already happening when artists sit down to make albums. We go into the past, we go into what we know, we go into our influences and the music we grew up listening to, and we kind of percolate that's some mysterious black box mechanism, and then create something new. And that's what's happening as well with machine learning. I think when we first started this project, we naively thought we could just kind of like hand our back catalog to some algorithm, and the algorithm would analyze that and spit out new songs that would be, you know, new Yacht songs. And the project, the art would be about committing to that, whatever it was. as soon as we started working on this, we realized that, you know, we're not there yet, thank God. You know, algorithms can't just spit out pop songs. If they could, the airwaves would be full of them, right? So what they can do is, you know, you can sort of set a machine learning model on a very specific problem. And for us, we were really interested in exploring the latent space between songs that we had already written. So what we did, I'll just get into the weeds a little bit so you can get a sense of it. So we used a model called a latent space interpolation model. It's called Music VAE. And it allowed us to take two different melodies in MIDI form, so just in symbolic form, and run those melodies together and explore and sample the multidimensional space in between those melodies. So effectively allowing us to find melodies hidden in between songs that we had already written. In order to do that effectively, we had to run hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pairs of melodies at different temperatures, so different sort of riskiness, and then sample those results, and then take those results and use them to build a massive sort of raw generative output sort of source material to then pick through manually and compose songs out. So effectively, we went into the studio with hundreds of MIDI files that existed in this kind of latent space in between existing older melodies. And then from those MIDI files, which, you know, have no structure whatsoever, no verse, chorus, verse, just notes in a row until they fall down the stairs, we culled moments, melodies that we really liked, and we took those, looped them, sampled them, structured them, built songs out of them as though they were sort of the building blocks of a large song. And then we decided which melodies would be assigned to which instruments, guitars, vocal melodies, drums, bass, keyboard lines, etc. And then we performed everything live. So, you know, if you listen to the record, it sounds like, you know, it sounds like an interesting experimental rock or pop record. It doesn't sound like generative, you know, plausible nonsense. It sounds like songs. And that's because there was very much a human in the loop, right? We use the machine learning model to facilitate the process of generating source material. And then from that source material, we built songs in the way that we would always build songs as humans in a studio playing music.
AI today is more obtuse than people realize. So while on one hand, the things it is able to do, as with the album Chain Tripping, are magical, on the other, they are so much less than we might expect when we innocently engage with them for the first time. In any event, similar to how architects use Autodesk software, calling back to our interview earlier this season with Lily Smith, the machine was a generation engine that provided an abundance of starting points for Yacht to choose from. Of course, much of that content isn't necessarily good or useful.
It was super weird. I think that's the best way to describe it. I mean, there's this kind of wonkiness to all generated material, in my opinion. I mean, across all mediums, across text and visual material, there's this strangeness, this offness that we call the computer accent. But I mean, you can call it whatever you want. It's this disconnect between what the model is trying to do and what it is doing. It's the space of failure, I suppose. And in that space, there's all kinds of melodies that are just too weird, just too sideways. That's the kind of thing that humans just wouldn't come up with, not because we're not good enough or we're too good, but just because it's two steps to the right of what any human would ever think to do. It's just coming from a completely different position. It also has no consideration of the body, right? It doesn't know, quote unquote, what it feels like to play any of these melodies on the guitar or on the keyboard. If it's physically challenging to do, all it knows is the MIDI data that it's been fed in the training process. So a lot of these melodies sounded odd, but simple enough. I mean, simple enough to play. But then when we sat down to actually play them, we found that they were extremely challenging because they forced us to acknowledge the embodied habits that we bring with us as players into the studio. I mean, everything we know how to sing and play comes from our own experience, what we think sounds good and what feels good to play, and what has always worked for us, what we picked up from music we grew up listening to and what we picked up as little tricks for what works for us in the studio over the years. None of that really is visible until you start trying to do something completely different. And then when you're trying to do something completely different, you end up with these really odd moments of just, you know, for example, my partner, Jonna, spent probably half an hour trying to learn how to play like a simple, you know, one bar drum pattern, just because it just came from a position of just complete non-bodily experience. But the cool thing, the fortunate thing about that is that it forces you out of your patterns. And I think it actually makes you a better player and a better singer. I certainly think it's made me a better singer. if only because it's forced me to acknowledge my crutches.
I like the phrase computer accent. Also, it is an interesting notion that there are some things we don't try to do because of patterns or assumptions based on the physicality of the world and the things we've previously learned about. For me, that opens up an entirely new vein of unintended consequences that come from AI, as software is able to interpret and mash up reality without the limitations our bodies build into them. In addition to their own use of AI, Yacht leveraged a neural network technology from Google.
Yeah, the NSynth is a neural synthesizer. It's actually Google Creative Lab in London that built it. It's not a consumer product, but you can make it yourself. All the tools are available. It's open source. And it's kind of different from everything else that we use, because in the process of making the record, we mostly dealt with the machine learning models on a symbolic composition level. You know, we weren't really dealing with raw audio, because training machine learning models on raw audio just takes a level of computational power that is not really accessible to anybody. So a lot of the machine learning models that you see that use raw audio have a really low sample rate in order to make it possible to even train them. So they have this kind of reedy, lo-fi, low kind of compression quality to them. The NSynth is a tool that's essentially like an etch-a-sketch. It looks like an etch-a-sketch anyway. It's a square screen with four knobs, one knob on each corner, and each knob represents a different sound. So let's say, you know, electric guitar, car horn, cat meow, synthesizer. And what it allows you to do is explore the latent space between all of those different sounds in a sort of purely generative way. So you can create a sound that is halfway between, you know, a cat meow and a tuba. And what's interesting about it is that sort of from a sonic standpoint, it doesn't really sound good because of this sort of low compression problem. So it sounds really kind of janky. And when we first came across this tool, we really didn't like it. We thought it sounded bad. You know, we thought, well, why would we use all of this computational power to make a sort of farty kind of sound when we could just make that same sound on a synthesizer and it could be so much richer? Ultimately, though, the more we played with it, the more we realized that just because it failed at doing what it was supposed to do didn't mean that it was not an interesting instrument. It's kind of like a drum machine, an 808 drum machine, or a synthesizer itself. You know, a drum machine doesn't sound like live drums, and it fails in that capacity. But it does sound like something completely new, something completely different. And that, you know, because of that, we have dance music, and we have hip hop, and we have all these new genres of music that emerged out of this completely different sound that, in, you know, technically was a failure. And the NSynth is really similar to that. It's got this kind of undeniably strange sound, and it ended up being a huge part of the album because we've sort of figured out how to make it work. But yeah, it's a very odd instrument, and it's really recognizable. If you're listening to the record and you hear a sound that's sort of unlike anything you've ever heard on an album, that's the NSynth.
Chain Tripping was a highly collaborative project that involved myriad people beyond the band. For example, the lyrics on the album involved the work of the AI artist Ross Goodwin. Let's learn more.
We were really interested in this idea that you could take quote-unquote meaningless material and give it meaning through performance. That was really exciting to us. Like, how could we take generated lyrics and perform them in such a way that they would feel like something real, like they would feel like we were saying something that we meant. And I think we did accomplish that largely because we worked closely with Ross to build a text generating model trained on our influences. So every band we'd ever loved, all the music we grew up listening to, the music our parents listened to, our own back catalog, our immediate community of friends and musicians and collaborators. We ended up building a corpus of, I think, 2 million words, which he then trained a character RNN model on, which is a text model that generates text character by character. And he added a component that allowed it to also title the songs. So he essentially gave us one instance, one sort of pass of this model, which we printed out on a single sheet of dot matrix printer paper, because we love old technology, I guess. And we brought that huge like sheaf of paper essentially into the studio with us. And I literally sat on the floor of the studio with a highlighter for a week, just highlighting all the interesting lyrics. And then we, much like sort of we collaged or cut things up on the music side, we did the same thing with the lyrics. We sort of assembled songs out of this raw material and then put it on and into the live performance. So, I mean, that's something that we couldn't have done on our own, I think. And Ross has been a really great collaborator because he's sort of this gonzo poet, hacker, artist person who's really has a great grip on, you know, not just how to do this stuff, but why to do this stuff. And we've had many, many interesting conversations. And that's kind of been one of the most exciting things about this album for us, sort of on an experiential level, is that it has put us in touch with people that are so far beyond, you know, the everyday purview of an indie band. You know, like we're dealing, you know, we have personal relationships with these research scientists and engineers and hackers and poets and artists from all around the world who have been helping us with all the different pieces of this.
As technical skills are automated, the different creative disciplines come collaboratively together. Let's hear about the side effects of adding a machine as an entity, not just a tool, into the collaborative process.
Well, there's a lot of things I really appreciate. One of them is there's something really interesting about bringing a sort of disembodied, non-anthropomorphic entity into the creative process. Because normally when you're in the studio with your bandmates, your collaborators, you know, everyone brings something to the table. And sometimes people get really emotionally attached to the thing that they came up with, even if it doesn't serve the song. So we end up having these conflicts where, you know, oh, I don't want to get rid of that line. I love it. I wrote it, even though it doesn't work. I want to keep it in the song. And the song is worse for it. But because we were working with generated material, we were able to make decisions as a group that were not influenced by ego at all, that we were able to say, this works, this doesn't work. You know, let's make the best possible song rather than let's worry about satisfying each other's delicate sensibilities, which, you know, it seems like a small thing, but it really did allow us to serve the music in a way that we had never been able to do before. It also allowed us to be more subtle, I think, than we'd ever been before. I think this record, in an odd way, sort of liberated us from our sense of having to sound a certain way or having to be a certain kind of band to satisfy, you know, people's expectations of who or what Yacht is. Because we were working in this completely new way, we were able to just make the best music we've ever made, kind of. I mean, it sounds sort of self-aggrandizing, but it really is our favorite music we've ever made. And it feels like more Yacht than Yacht. Like, it feels more true to who we are than anything we've ever made, even though this new weird variable is in the mix.
I'm not sure there can be a stronger endorsement than more Yacht than Yacht. How does Claire see emerging technologies further impacting music in the future?
I honestly think it's like the synthesizer or the drum machine. It's this thing where it's this radical new technological variable coming in from left field that is going to have, or is maybe even currently having, its kind of reefer madness moment where everyone's really paranoid about it somehow, you know, automating artists out of existence or, you know, whatever, making things more difficult for us. But I think there is an opportunity to grab onto this new technology and adapt it to our purposes and subvert it from, you know, the established purposes and make something interesting of it and maybe even make a new form of art out of it or with it. I think we're in a really interesting moment right now where some of these tools are just now becoming kind of artist-friendly enough to even be useful or usable to people who don't have hardcore technical backgrounds. And I think we're going to see an efflorescence of really interesting creative material emerge out of that. And the more sort of democratic these tools get, the more unpredictable it will be. And I think it's a super exciting time to be at the beginning of all of this and to see how this new music, this new art is beginning to define and establish itself. Like, I want to be nowhere else but here. But yeah, I mean, it is also moving very, very quickly. So truly, truly, who knows what it will do? Maybe in 10 years, we won't even be making music for people anymore. Maybe we'll just be making music for other AIs to listen to. I look forward to that challenge.
Well, that's certainly an interesting take. While my knee-jerk reaction to the idea that musicians will soon evolve to primarily make music for AIs as opposed to humans is one of skepticism, Claire certainly knows far more about this than I do. So this is just one more thing to be curious about the ways AI will continue to change the world in the years ahead. Still, Claire generally thinks that AI might become an effective human replacement for certain forms of content generation far earlier than we or most of our guests think. Let's hear more.
I think one thing that was kind of our operating thesis for this record was that we're at this moment right now, right before the perfection of AI. I think, you know, in 2 or 3 years, who knows exactly when, we will be at a place where, you know, text generating models are able to generate text that is effectively indistinguishable from human written text. Arguably, we're there already. There's a model called GPT-2 that pretty much does that. We're going to be able to have, you know, deep fakes that are completely indistinguishable from photographs of humans. All of this stuff is coming very quickly. And I think when we get to this place where AI is quote unquote perfect, it will stop being interesting. But right now, we're in this sliver of time where there's just this like this failure and this wonkiness and this strangeness and this imperfection that is kind of visible across the board, across all media. And you can sort of, you recognize it when you see it. And I think it was really important for us to kind of capture this slice of time, because I think in a few years, we will all be nostalgic for the times in which the AI models were not completely perfect. And it will be kind of like the analog of AI. Like people will be putting on affectations of wonky AI in the same way that, you know, artists now record on tape, or we have this fetish for vinyl, or we use, you know, iPhone camera filters that look like old VHS video. Like, it's going to feel like that, I think.
The idea of AI producing perfect content feels a whole lot farther out than a few years. And yet, even as I say that, in less than a year of our doing the show and talking to innovators, we've witnessed text generation improving markedly. So, who knows? Even still, I can't imagine a theoretically perfect AI text generation engine being available as a consumer or professional product in any approaching time horizon. The idea that Claire, an obviously brilliant thinker who is deeply immersed in making with the newest technologies, holds this opinion thus makes me squirm a bit. I want to hear more and understand where she's coming from.
One way of thinking about it is that, you know, maybe we can get to a place, probably we'll get to a place where machine learning models in some combination are able to generate a song that sounds like a song a human wrote, or a novel that reads like a novel a human wrote. And that's sort of this, it's scary because there's a sort of formal similarity between two things, but you can't fake context and you can't fake intent, right? I mean, part of the reason that we enjoy art and music is not just because of like the formal quality of a song and how it sounds, but also who sings it and where it comes from and why they wrote it and the entire sort of human story that surrounds it. You can't take that away. And because that really is a huge part of experiencing and consuming and appreciating art is, you know, the art itself becomes this third object between the artist and the listener, say, but there's still a conversation happening there. And I think you can't take that away. So I'm not too like scared of losing that. I think we can never really fake that. And I think perhaps even the more sophisticated these machine learning models get, the more value we will place on that context and that intent and that larger story, because that will be the thing that we realize is actually quite central to the entire experience of making and consuming art. There's also this possibility that, you know, I think about the history of art, and like you think about, for example, the invention of the camera, it sort of made obsolete the task of painting photorealistic images of things, you know, painting portraits of people and still lives. The camera sort of displaced that form of art, but it also allowed painters to enter into a realm of abstraction that perhaps never would have been explored had the camera not been invented. So I like to think perhaps of some of these machine learning models being like a camera of their individual disciplines, right? I mean, a text generating model that's able to make perfect text, maybe that just becomes the camera of writing, and we have to completely, you know, step outside of our comfort zone to reinvent what writing means in the 21st century. And what an exciting proposition that is for an artist. I think that can be really, really exciting. I think that artists are always going to find ways around and through all of this stuff, and artists are going to be the ones who are going to help us articulate and understand this rapidly changing world, which is why we should always listen to the artists, because they know.
This sort of importance of humanity centered around the specific human creator is something we've heard a lot about from different guests, going back at least as far as AJ Christian last season. But I'm actually more skeptical of this. I think people are generally selfish and small-minded. I'm sorry to say. They want what they want, ultimately. And whether it came from a machine or from Amy from Topeka is not particularly important in most cases. The ubiquity of Amazon compared to the quaint success of Etsy is a small illustration of this point. So sure, yes, at some level, the human artist matters. But I'm sorry to say that I fear for the most part, it won't. Let's hope I'm wrong on this one. Claire had a short anecdote about the process of working on Chain Tripping, about projecting meaning into the machine's content that evokes Stephanie Dinkins' story about how she perceives meaning and a level of almost human wisdom and insight in her not the only one using the phrase, take it to the would-be.
Odd thing about this record for me is that I was forced to do that as a performer. Like even before it made it to the fans, I was projecting my own meaning onto words that I didn't write and trying to sort of cobble together some kind of meaning to the songs that made it possible for me to sort of perform and convey them with my voice. And so it's oddly democratizing, I think, because now the fans, the listeners, and the band are all trying to figure out what it all means at the same time. And we were going to have as many interpretations of what it means as there are people to listen to it.
Let's finish up with Claire's perspective on technology and the future.
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to give you probably a kind of nihilistic answer, which is that, is there a future? looking down the barrel of climate change, I mean, for me, the future is very small. Like the future doesn't feel vast. The future doesn't feel infinite to me, like on an individual personal level. The past feels infinite to me. And I think that's one of the things that I find kind of comforting about machine learning as it's structured, is that it's kind of not about the future. It's not something that kind of scorches the past and makes something new. It's something that depends on the past, that depends on collective memory. You know, you can't build a machine learning model without giving it the best and or worst of ourselves, to without feeding the past into it. And I think the exciting thing about these tools is not so much that they are creating something new, but that they are giving us the opportunity to like really delve deep into who we are and into how we got here. And maybe, just maybe, that helps us survive the future.
Thanks again to our guest, Claire Evans. So, John, how did our interview with Claire impact your thinking about the work we are doing with Creative Next?
I was fascinated by their process for songwriting using the AI to generate source material. I think, the way she described that, they took the MIDI files of older things they had done and, the AI sorted it out to create this new material, which they then curated to come up with, these new sounds on their tracks. So I think the experimental nature of that and the sort of very human act of collaboration in conjunction with this, very automated system was, as you put it earlier, it harkens back to, what Mario was talking about in terms of this sort of experimental and using the AI as part of the palette of your art. It reminded me a lot of what Mario spoke of. So having the human in the loop for these projects, I think, is really important and is sort of pushing at the edge of what's possible, with AI automated music or art or what have you. Will that continue, how much of this is there in the avant-garde, right? So how much of this will continue? I don't know. But right now it's completely fascinating.
Yeah, it is. As we finish the third season, I feel as though my journey with this project has shifted from one of data collection to one of synthesis. And of course, I continue to learn new things from every guest, but I'm also seeing patterns and commonalities across these different people and companies and technologies and services. So while the exploration is still worthwhile, I also feel like I'm getting the insights I need to move beyond learning about what people are doing and converting that into a look ahead at the impacts these trends and technologies will have in the years and decades ahead. So I was just reflecting, listening to Claire, that both feels good, but also may impact the editorial direction of our project going forward. So what did Claire say that was the biggest surprise or new kernel of knowledge for you?
So I was particularly taken with her description of, receiving back this source material from the AI and remarking about, the AI doesn't care about the physical nature of playing instruments. So it's going to come up with melodies or harmonies or what have you that are maybe a little bit odd and or unusual. And so I think we've seen this this type of thing before, you know, as Noam Brown described what Libratus could do, the poker playing AI. Yeah. People playing Libratus said, you know, it felt like this was playing, you know, somebody who had learned how to play poker on Mars, right? Yeah. So it's there's this strangeness to it. At the same time, I think that part of that comes from the AI not having the same context that human beings would have around how you play poker or how you write music or how you, you know, think about these things. Mm-hmm. I have witnessed sort of, you know, in teaching my own children music that the things that they do early on around writing songs, especially the syncopations, the phrasing, all these things are things that I would never think to do. And I always think, wow, that's really interesting. And in fact, in this song on Claire's album, on the Yacht album, the song Hey Hey, there are a bunch of sort of weird syncopations in the melody that remind me of something that my son was doing. And it occurs to me that this machine-generated material is context-free in some ways, in the same way that children's compositions are context-free. They're breaking rules that they don't know exist in the first place. Yeah. So I wonder if when we reflect on the strangeness of the computer accent or AI-generated source material, that we're reacting to the lack of cultural mooring, or it's not attached to our the expected outputs. So we're you know, it makes our heads turn. But that may have more to do with our knowledge of context and its generation is just context free.
Right. That's right. That's true. You know, Claire talked about the perfect AI, which is to say an AI that is capable of producing human quality content in sort of full or long forms, as being something that's coming in just a few years. And I found that shocking and frightening, frankly. Now, those timeframes are an outlier. We've heard nothing like that from any of our other guests. And in fact, if anything, they've preached the opposite. Nor the research we've conducted outside the show. Like, this is, in my experience, this is such a statistical outlier. So I'm skeptical, but I also think Claire is a genius. So I'm a little bit worried too, and feel like I need to learn more. I don't know if it struck you the same way.
Yeah, as we've embarked on this research project, I think there's a lot to be said for uneven distribution of technology. So I do think there are certain possibilities for instance, I was quite taken aback that Libratus, that we spoke of earlier, you know, could beat human poker players, yeah, or that, you know, AlphaGo could do the same in the game of Go. And that is, you know, very much unevenly distributed technology. That is, in certain instances, these things are achievable. Much in the same way applied AI sometimes works wonderfully and other times completely bombs. Yeah. So I don't think it's impossible. I don't know the level of distribution that we're talking about. Like, is it in, you know, very select instances, or is this sort of a universally available thing? And I would argue that we're going to have pockets of interesting development for a long time before there's any sort of even distribution of, you know, AI generated, whether it's music or artwork or writing or any of these other things we've been talking about this season.
Agreed. So what did you learn from Claire that has influenced your life and how you're living today?
So one of the things that, that I'm sort of reflecting on from this interview with Claire was this reminder that the AI tool sets are extremely broad in their capabilities, and that exploration is going to be you know, it's going to remain a huge part of incorporating AI into the creative process for the foreseeable future. I think experimenting with these different tools, these different palettes, these different materials, as you know, that's been described, is going to be part of the way that we get to wherever we get. Which reminds me of, you know, like the Homebrew Computer Club, right? That wasn't that the genesis of Apple and some of the you know, sort of early computer hackers. They were experimenters in and around computer hardware, which gave birth to you know, sort of all sorts of miraculous technologies down the line. And you know, I think like the Homebrew Computer Club, probably misnaming it. There's a lot of experimentation to be made with AI, a lot of prototyping, a lot of strangely computer accented things to be produced before we get where we're going.
Yeah, that's true. That's certainly true. I love the way that Claire and Yacht took such a 360 perspective on using AI. You know, they didn't just use it in making the music, which we might expect. They used it in everything about the process, from the music to the album art to the communication and even beyond. And that ethos, and it really is sort of an artist's ethos of total immersion, is wonderful and something I want to be more open to myself. Not just doing the new thing in the core context, but how can using it in broader context teach me more and have a larger impact? That's definitely an approach I want to keep with me. So each episode, we finish up with a thing to think about, one question germane to what's been covered on the show today. This episode's thing to think about is, if you were to learn about AI by doing a creative project that used AI-related technologies, what sort of a project would you choose? Think about that for yourself and feel free to tweet at us about it at GoCreativeNext. Creative Next is a proud member of Civil, a community-owned platform for independent journalism. Learn more at civil.co, that's civil.co. We are sponsored by GoInvo, a design practice dedicated to innovation in healthcare, whose clients are as varied as AstraZeneca, 3M Health Information Services, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Learn more at goinvo.com. We're also sponsored by Design Museum Foundation, a new kind of museum. They believe design can change the world. They're online, nomadic, and focused on making design accessible to everyone. Their mission? Bring the transformative power of design everywhere. You can learn about their exhibitions, events, magazine, and more at designmuseumfoundation.org. Our final sponsor is BIF. As a purpose-driven firm, BIF is committed to bringing design strategy where it is needed most: healthcare, education, and public service, to create value for our most vulnerable populations. To learn more and connect, visit them at biff.is, that's biff.is. Please subscribe to Creative Next on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us at Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. You can get in touch with us at the Creative Next website, creativenext.org, or follow us on Twitter at GoCreativeNext. On Medium, we are partnered with Towards Data Science, where we publish articles to extend and build upon these episodes. Check out all that Towards Data Science has to offer at towardsdatascience.com. I'm Dirk Niemeyer, whom you can reach at dniemeyer, and my partner in crime is Jonathan Follett, who is at John Follett. Thanks to our guest Claire Evans, who is at The Universe. That is the words The Universe. Tweet to us with questions, comments, topics, guest suggestions, and include the hashtag CreativeNext. And the home base for everything we do is at creativenext.org. We recommend you sign up for our low-volume newsletter there. That's it for Creative Next Season 3. We'll see you in a couple of months for Season 4. Until then, be well.